I'm glad to see you, too. Well, it works out this way. Having completed the entire span of Scientology research at all of the upper levels and rounded it all out, I never thought I'd be called upon to suddenly undercut the lot, find a brand new series of processes and a processing theory and philosophy on which to build the edifice. You don't think that's quite a trick. Of course, actually, knowing the upper strata, it might be seen to be very simple to build the lower strata. Well, actually, it's quite the contrary. You see with such enormous clarity exactly what has been going wrong and exactly what you've been doing that you wonder how anybody could miss it. You see, and you say, well, it's a very simple matter, you know. You got into a knuckleheaded frame of mind and started postulating purposes, you see. And then these accumulate mass in the basis of a solution of your difficulties in the political environment. And for the last trillions multiple, some vast figure, you see, you've been lousing yourself up. That's what it is. You get it now, huh? You wonder, why don't you understand this, you knucklehead? It's awful clear to me. It's very clear to me. I postulate these things and get all my time and so on and then so on. And then all this energy mass is still around. And it's automatic solutions to everything and knocks hell out of me. Can't do anything and have to wear a body and all kinds of wild things. Don't you get it? I'm afraid you'd find people would look at you blankly. They would look at you blankly. They are worried just today about the fact that the stock exchange trembled and that tell and tell rose while gold shares sunk. And this shows that there is some interesting implication concerning racialism in Lower Slobovia. And that's what's really wrong with them. They know. It's the fact that they might go broke if they didn't go broke or something, you see. If they didn't have enough money in order to buy a then the bosses say, and then so forth. They know what's wrong with them. And their wife was cross at them at breakfast. They know what's wrong with them. And you say, well, actually, you just think that that's what's wrong with you, because in actual fact, what you've been doing is carving yourself down. See, a lot of trillions of years ago, you let these go and pause and so on, you make the GPS and so on, and they react against you and so on, and you're not very able in your environment and so on. Don't you get it? Of course, our communication line has absolutely stopped at that point. You can know so clearly exactly what is wrong with the being. You can know so brilliantly, with such insight, exactly what's wrong with you, and see it unraveling at great speed and with considerable accuracy. And so seeing it, you wonder how anybody else could fail to see it. Well, the funny part of it is, well, if you try to, you got a fella there and he's facing this boa constrictor. This boa constrictor is about to constrict. And you say to this fellow, I'm going to run a little process on you. In your childhood, I'm afraid you're not going to get much attention from this fellow. See? He sits there looking fixedly at this snake, you know. Oh, he knows what's wrong with him. He's about to be constricted. Well, some religious activities have had solutions to this. They say it's very simple. All you do is say, there is no substance to reality. And you see, you look at the boa constrictor and you think good thoughts. And you think there ain't no boa constrictor, you see? And if you think these thoughts strongly enough while you're being constricted, you won't mind it.
They've had methods of coping with this in the past, so we're not completely original here. But to jack up Scientology one level and run a whole new philosophy underneath of Scientology, which is immediately graspable, understandable, and quickly agreed with, which can be discussed in the highest intellectual planes over the very, very best breakfast tables and in the lowest hovels, all with complete and utter reality the whole way, and to provide in that sphere a therapy based on no different an understanding than this, and a reason why. And the last few weeks I've been walking around in a small circle trying to do just that, and finally succeeded. Finally got a Scientology zero that undercuts Scientology one, in which everybody would, I'm sure, agree with. Scientology zero, as you knew me for, was descriptions of the environment and what was wrong with it and so forth. This takes care of the world in which the person lives. Has nothing to do with his mind at all. Scientology one is the isness of things and takes care of his mind as well, but Scientology zero simply takes care of the environment in which the person lives. Now, the whole subject is instantly summable in of its own heading, which is the dangerous environment. That's all. You just say, the dangerous environment. And that sums up what you're talking about and the frame of mind of the individual who is listening to you. You have immediate agreement that the environment is dangerous. Now, the funny part of it is, a great many people who are professional dangerous environment makers. These include the politician, the policeman, the newspaperman. All of these blokes are specialists, the undertaker. These birds are specialists in the dangerous environment. That's their mainstay. They sell a dangerous environment. If they didn't sell a dangerous environment, they feel they would promptly go broke and so on. So it is to their interest to make the environment far more dangerous than it is. The environment is dangerous enough, but they make it far more dangerous than it is. They sell a dangerous environment, 100%. And like judo, the avidity with which these people sell a dangerous environment can be used by the Scientologist. The whole activity of judo is using the strength of the opponent to overcome the opponent. He aims a whale of a blow at your head, and the strength which he used to propel that blow takes him over your shoulder and onto the floor. So understanding Scientology Zero would include an understanding that the very person who is the worst enemy of Scientology, the chaos merchant, the slave master, the fellow who's trying to hold everybody down, the fellow who's trying to keep everybody shook up one way or the other and so he can't ever get up again and so forth, the fellow who makes his money and his daily bread out of how terrible everything is. That fellow, of course, would forward Scientology Zero for you with great speed. It's an interesting comment to make. It's worth thinking about in passing. Now, let's go in now to modern philosophy of the Toynbee School. A fellow named Toynbee spent a lot of time in a library, back into the library, you see, and he knew life, finally. He finally knew life. He'd read enough library books written by other fellows who had spent most of their time in libraries. And he came to a great understanding of life. His
actual information on the subject of Mexico, of course, is the tourist poster. And the picture of the Mexican sitting against the wall with his sombrero over his eyes and his serape around his shoulders, sitting in the sun. There he is. So he says, with great conclusive exclamation points, followed by innumerable degrees,
the reason the Mexican does not succeed is he has insufficient challenge in his environment. Not enough challenge his environment. Therefore, he doesn't amount to anything. The reason the South American, isn't an up-and-coming breeder of countries and so forth is its people have an insufficient challenge in the environment. The reason the African black has never made any progress in civilization is because his environment has insufficient challenge. Then he closes his library books, having written these asininities, and goes back to sleep.
He never talked to any Mexicans. Out in the Philippines, why, a brassy, energetic white man jumps up and he says to the Igorotes, "Now, if you will just cut a pathway from the village down to the river, and take a bullock cart in the morning and go down to the river and fill up a water tank and bring it up here, why, your women will not have to be making that walk to the river. And you should engage in this public works project at once." And he's absolutely outraged because these people do not engage in it at once. And he goes away and he says, "Ha-ha, those people have insufficient challenge in their environment. Nothing for them to measure up to. No ambition. Not like us in the West. We've got challenge in our environment." This guy had challenge in his environment, huh? His mama opened up his mouth and spooned Wheaties into it. And Papa wrote all the checks as he went through college. And the way was paved in all directions with machinery and vehicles, and the environment had been licked. So, of course, he can stand up there and be brassy. What's the real environment of this Igorote sitting there around the fire listening to this fellow tell him how he has to cut this path down to the river? What's the real environment? He got a little boy. He thinks this little boy is a very nice little boy. He knows this little boy hasn't got a chance in Hades living till he's 7. He knows that. Disease, bad food, and so forth. So he just sort of quits along that line, gives a lick and promise. He knows that when the rains come, they won't just be rains. They'll just flood every seed out of the ground and pound the fields to pieces. And if he can salvage anything out of that, why, maybe, why, he might live a few months. And he knows very well that all he's got to do is walk under the wrong tree and get hit by a snake, and that'll be that. In other words, he already knows he can't live. That's what he knows. He can't live. So why try? In other words, the challenge of the environment is absolutely overwhelming to this fellow. I've studied 21 primitive races, including the white race. I know these boys pretty well. I've eaten lizards' tails around the campfires with them. And it's absolutely staggering, the threat of the environment of such peoples. Mexico, the political situation, the crop failures, the avarice of taxation, religious taxation, 2 or 3 different kinds of courts that you could be hauled up to. Everything going to hell in a balloon, and if you haven't got that, you got bandits. Dysentery, so forth. Strictly a case of why try? So why not put your back up against a wall and pull your sombrero over your eyes and just go to sleep? It's just too much. And that's your black in Africa. Same story. Too much challenge in the environment. The environment is too dangerous. And that environment is too dangerous for a fellow to have ambition. They like to tell a favorite type of thing that you must have challenge in your environment. They like to tell a story about, well, how about this young painter? And here he is out there in Terre Haute, Indiana, and there's no challenge in his environment at all. He doesn't have any friends. He eventually, of course, moves to the big city. They make a big deal out of this thing, you see. The environment, you see, offers no challenge or something of this sort, you know. Heck, the reason he became painter in the first place is he didn't want to work down there at the feed store with Butch Gregerty. Throwing bales of hay around. This guy beat him up during kindergarten, beat him up during grammar school, and beat him up during high school. Now he's supposed to work for him in the feed store. That's a little bit too much challenge. Nobody around there buying any paintings, too. And he's prompted by the fact that nobody says, sir, the environment is hostile to that degree. Nobody believes in what he's doing. It's hostile to that degree. He doesn't have any future, as far as he's concerned, in any line that he can do. In other words, he faces continual starvation. He faces social ostracism. He's unable to communicate or contribute to his community, and so forth. That's a very hostile environment. So he goes to a friendlier one, Greenwich Village. He'd rather starve to death quietly down in Greenwich Village, don't you see, than be threatened to death out in Terre Haute, Indiana. Challenge of the environment. And we come to the conclusion that the individual, whether he be white, black, red, or yellow, if he is a man and if he is on this planet, and if he has not been able to achieve his own destiny, we must conclude that he is in an environment he finds overwhelming. And that his methods of taking care of that environment are inadequate to his survival. And that his existence is as apathetic or as unhappy as his environment seems to him to be overwhelming. Now, if we get those principles down, we have Scientology zero. Of course, the chaos merchant, who wants an environment to look very, very disturbing. Somebody says there's such a thing as a good news story. Have you read a paper lately? There's no good news stories. Train wrecked, child raped, murder. What's good about these stories? There's no such thing as good press. These are fellows who are shoving the environment in your face and saying, look, dangerous, look, overwhelming, look, threatening, look, look. Well, they not only report the most threatening bits of news that they couldn't have any possible effect upon their readers' lives, but also sensationalize it and make it worse than it is. What more do you want as a proof of their intention? Well, of course, it's the chaos merchant. He's paid to the degree that he can make the environment threatening. Now, it isn't just and only the politician, the soldier, the militarist, the fellow making the big rockets, and the newspaper reporter and so forth that's making the environment threatening. There's a lot of people spend their whole lives as professional chaos merchants, just worry everybody around them to death. In fact, the percentage is pretty good. The percentage is probably 1 out of 4. Pretty good. If I can just keep Henry worried enough, why, he does what I tell him. This sort of philosophy. Just spread the confusion, spread the upset, you see. And along with this goes, I wonder why Henry doesn't get ahead. Of course, they're making Henry sick. So the chaos merchant has lots of troops, a lot of people with vested interest. What's a blackmailer? But somebody was trying to extort money by telling somebody that he can make the environment far more dangerous. If I just tell people that you and Mamie Glutz were seen in the tourist cabin, a few quick pounds will keep this environment a little less dangerous. As I won't tell. You get the whole theory of the thing. Well, it isn't as crude, you see, as extortion. The newspaper prints, thousands dead in, and the thing lies there on the newsstands, and people think, oh, God, thousands dead in, you see. They're hit with the news, they can't let go of it, and actually they respond to an extortion. They throw pennies down. You turn the inside page, see the rest of the headline, it says history. Thousands dead in history. Path strewn with death. Have you been plagued lately? The Great Plague took 12 million citizens. In the year 1200 and so on. Will you be a cancer victim? Support your local doctor. The medico, you know, he doesn't get paid for the number of people he makes well. He gets paid for the number of people in the society who are sick. Don't think it's any accident that the cops will take a dangerous criminal, throw him into prison, make him more antisocial and more dangerous, and then release him upon the society. Don't think this prison system, which is being used, is an accident. It's a marvelous method of getting police appropriations. If you didn't have that much crime, why, nobody'd permit police salaries and equipment to be extorted out of them. Of course, the police chief, he's as important as he has policemen under him. He's got 50 policemen, or he's got 1,000 policemen. He's important and draws pay in ratio to the number of policemen. Well, the number of policemen give you the number of amount of crime there must be in the society. If there's no crime in the society, naturally, you don't have very many policemen. If there's lots of crime in the society, naturally, you have lots of policemen. See? So the more crime, why, the more cops. And the more sickness, the more doctors. Newspaper reporters, for instance, sit around and think solely on this basis. If I could just run into a big story. I can see this fellow sitting there now. There's a schoolhouse, you know, a big, beautiful school has just been finished, you see. School children are playing out in the yard, playing happily ring around the rosy. And this newspaper reporter sitting there looking at the schoolyard. Supposing that should all catch on fire just as they all go inside. What a story. You know, what a story. Sitting right here with my cameraman, I'd become famous overnight, you see. Time magazine, Life magazine, probably give me coverage all over the place, you know. Charred bodies of little children, you know. Well, that's what he eats. That's what he eats. That makes his life forward. And, of course, that's an exaggerated case, but this does run and is to be found in the society to a very, very marked degree. It isn't just the newspaper reporter, the politician, it's also the individual who here and there that you see that engages upon this sort of thing. So the environment is not as dangerous ever as it is made to appear. Here you have tremendous numbers of people, vast amounts of money. In fact, I think 3/4 of the national income of the United States right now is dedicated to atomic war. Well, that's interesting. There hasn't been one. If they hadn't developed it, there wouldn't be one. Elementary. So the money that financed the horror is now busy supporting the horror, don't you see? And, you know, I don't think there have been 2 cents spent on the actual reduction of the threat of atomic war. They talk about shelters. People could crawl into shelters and that sort of thing.
The truth of the matter is, if you had a few billions to throw around, you could probably dream up a defense for atom bombs that would detonate them in the air. You could probably render them null and void without too much trouble. If any politician was ever interested in peace, they aren't. They get all their appropriations and public interest and so forth and the amount of disturbance. Why, he could probably dream up some solution of some kind or another that would handle this international tension situation. And certainly if they spent as much money on it as they did on rockets, they could certainly come up to some kind of a solution. Well, I don't know. In Scientology, we could undoubtedly solve the thing without too much trouble. And talk about money and expense and so forth. It wouldn't take anywhere near the money and expense. But look at the money we would do people out of. Boy, look at the incomes we would cut. Oh, man. So, anything moving forward that tends to pacify or bring a calmed environment is met and makes a ridge with the backflow of vested interest in making a disturbed environment. So you get this ridge. Now, if Scientology moved on forward, the environment would become calmer and calmer. Not less adventurous, but calmer and calmer. In other words, it's potential hostile, unreachable, untouchable threat. And that sort of thing. The amount of threat contained in it would reduce. That's for certain. Because you see somebody who knows a few more things about life, and knows something about himself, and knows something about others, and gets a grip on the situation, why, he actually has less trouble in his environment. Even though it's only reduced slightly, it is reduced, don't you think? So that's a reduction. We'd say, well, somebody hasn't heard of hardly any Scientology, and yet he's one of the things you say about him, well, he has less turmoil in his environment. Now, that, of course, is a movement in the right direction. And that would bring about all sorts of things. That would bring about the individual resurgence, so that an individual, less threatened, just from a standpoint of the environment, tends to resurge. He gets less apathetic. He thinks he can maybe do more about life, you see. He can reach a little further. Therefore, he can exert a calming influence upon his immediate environment and so on. Now, as that progressed forward, you would produce individuals more and more and more who could bring more and more and more calm to the environment or handle things better and better, you see. And it's only things which aren't handled which are chaotic. So we'd get a situation where the threat of the environment would be dying out. This overwhelming, overpowering environment would be tamer and tamer as far as this is concerned. People would be less and less afraid. You'd have more and more opportunity of handling the actual problems that exist instead of people dreaming up problems in order to make a couple of quick bucks or pounds off of them, you see? Be a different looking picture. So, in actual fact, the chaos merchant does not like calming influences. He tends to fight these things. This wife, she's made her coffee and cakes for a long time, scaring her husband to death. She keeps him good and scared to death, scared in breakfast table, scared at dinner, and so forth and so on. And she, nothing else works. She brings in the pile of bills after supper, don't you see? Stress. She keeps putting stress on it and somehow or another consoling him during this thing about, consoles him about this, even though he is completely overwhelmed. There's nothing they can do about it and so on. Got him completely under her thumb. All right, this bird walks down to a P.E. course. Here's about communication. He talked to somebody, something like this. He starts talking to his wife. This is an experiment. Saying hello to her, something like this. He looks a little calmer. This is not to be borne. And incidentally, at that time, you can expect a considerable explosion. she's going to go on a tirade about the subject that he must not have anything more to do with Scientology. And every once in a while, you run into this in PE courses and that sort of thing. You run into this in practices and so on. Bill or Pete or Oscar or something, he mustn't have anything more to do with Scientology. Well, what have you run into at that point? You've run into a chaos merchant, see? And they're buying and selling this commodity called disturbance. And he's less disturbed. And so therefore, he obviously then is less under control and can be extorted from less. And so therefore, he is being lost as an edible breakfast. You're taking the food off the plate of the chaos merchant. Well, you'll see that ridge develop just on an individual basis. You certainly see it develop on a third dynamic basis. The newspaper, oh my gosh. Let's take the story of Scientology. The simple story of Scientology is quite remarkable in its simplicity. And in all the fog of press, one loses sight of it. I thought of this the other day. I was walking through a door to the lounge and so forth. Almost knocked myself out. I suddenly thought of this and I began to laugh. I couldn't stop laughing. I've been pressed to death here in the last few weeks. You see. I've had more silly questions asked me by silly reporters. And you could count us. They're marvelous. They're marvelous. I've developed a new technology for handling this. Very disconcerting. I laugh at them. New York Times on the phone the other day, I went into howls of laughter at the fellow, a couple of questions he was asking. And so on. Standard pattern questions always been asked before, you know. Goof questions and so on. You'd be surprised. This guy almost went into tears. He almost went into grief. He wasn't bothering me. He wasn't upsetting me. He wasn't annoying me, don't you see? And, of course, even though he's only trying to annoy the public and disturb the public, when he's interviewing somebody, you ought to be worried. And if you're not suitably worried, as his public should be suitably worried, taking this thing seriously and taking the potential threat that he has there seriously, of course, you've taken away from him practically everything he's got to offer. He can't hit you with anything, don't you see? This particular bloke wound up very, very friendly and made sure that he do come by and see him up in London and so forth if I got to town. Very happy to buy me a dinner and a drink. He was very, very cheerful about the whole thing. He wasn't trying to get more information. By this time, he was overwhelmed. He was propitiative. It was him that was going to give up the dinner and the drink. See? Up to that time, it was me that was going to give up the news. Only his impingement didn't work. Mine did. I didn't take him seriously. I've noticed lately that's very disconcerting. Or direct them to a sure, open and shut source. Just don't answer the question. Just direct them to a source. And the source smile at them. So, oh, you're asking that, you know. Well, see so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. Let's talk about something that's more important. But let's look at the true story of Scientology. Let's put it into its most banal form, but nevertheless, a very true form. A doctor of philosophy develops a philosophy. Step one, doctor of philosophy develops a philosophy. Step two, people find it interesting. Step three, people find it works. Step four, people pass it along to others. And step five, it grows. That's the story of Scientology. If you think it over for a moment, that is the story of Scientology. It really has no further ramifications than that. It's just blunt, straightforward. That's exactly what happens, you see. Doctor Philosophy develops a philosophy. People find it interesting. People find it works. People pass it along to others. And it grows. Next time you read a news story, think of this story. I went into stitches over this when I thought, look at the story that they're trying to make a story out of. There's no story there.
Except it's just an interesting story, the way you'd sometimes read in the old Spanish newspapers. The roses of Valencia are beautiful at this season of the year. Modern story's got to have disturbance and chaos, and it's got to have conflict, it's got to have upset, it's got to be chewing everybody up. Must be conflict. How do you get conflict into this story? Well, this is obviously they're dealing with something potent because it is growing. Because it is spreading, because people are doing things with it, because it's organizations are appearing with regard to it. Obviously, there's something going on here. But still, what is going on that a doctor of philosophy developed a philosophy and people found it interesting and people found it worked and people passed it along to others and it grew. You begin to look over the situation. You actually can't make any more story out of it than that. You can tell some bits here that amplify the thing. You can get some statistics. Well, all right, Dr. Flossie, Dr. Flossie, Dr. Flossie, all right. Well, is he so on? Do you know anything about it? Oh, yes, he's better educated in terms of semester hours and so forth than practically anybody that's teaching in philosophy in universities today. And didn't spend all his time in the back room of the library. Went out and studied various races of man and saw how their ethnical patterns fit together and saw how man was getting along and found there was a common denominator to existence and applying this to known philosophy and developing new materials on the thing, developed a philosophy. And it's all very adventurous. There's a lot of amusing anecdotes that go with it, but that's all the story you can make on it.
Well, this reporter, he's got to have some disturbance here. He's got to get this thing...
How do you make a conflict out of it? How do you get the whir and the whir? And how do these things go together with a swirl? Well, we take point number one. He's got to say, well, this fellow actually isn't educated. He doesn't have any degrees. He's never been any place. And so on. He actually never gets as far as saying it isn't a philosophy because that's a bit above his educational level. But he can try to find something wrong with the fellow who was doing this thing. He can never really find anything wrong, but he tries hard, you see, and he punches in all directions and comes up with some interesting adjectives and so on, but he really can't make the grade on the thing because his facts aren't supported. Now, as a matter of fact, people finding it interesting, he tries to say that people are hypnotized or they become unwilling victims or they're dragged off into lairs, you see, or he's got to do something here to make this disturbing and sensational, don't you see? Well, he, of course, can't quite make the grade there, but he tries. He tries, you see. He leaves it work strictly alone. He drops that like the cat dropped the hot chestnut. Because he knows it works. There's not really any doubt in these people's minds about any of these points. You see, they're just desperately trying to make a story out of this thing. As far as people passing it along to others is concerned, why, the medico, he thinks, gee, you know, if they pass this stuff along here to others, why, this would be pretty grim because people would become happy, and then what had happened to my income, you see? And that must be stopped, so everybody's got to be hammered and pounded and so forth. Actually, the biggest job of work which we do is trying to smooth it out so actually there are no economic hardships or otherwise. I'm working hard on that these days where abuses might exist. But they immediately have to dream up a word like cult. That vars everybody out because it makes it look like a closed group, see? A cult. The cult of Earth. It makes this as much sense, see? He's an earthman, so therefore he belongs to the earth cult. I mean, it makes this much sense, you see. But he works and sweats over this thing, and he really can't get any place for this thing. I noticed them sweating over this in the Washington raid stories and so on. They found the box, a message put into this box goes right to Ron, you know. They found this box, and my God, they took more portraits of that thing, I think. I don't know what they did. Seemed very, very terrible and unusual to them that a communication line did exist there. It was very upsetting to them. how they worked at it, see? But yet they couldn't do anything much about it. And it grows, and that's what alarms them. Saturday Evening Post's whole theme is how startled they were to find out that it had grown. They thought it had all died away, and they were all being very complacent about it. The writer told me this, you see. Everybody was quite relaxed about the whole thing, and then all of a sudden they found out that it had grown to enormous proportions, and it kept on growing all through those years, and it hadn't disappeared, and it hadn't been just a 24-hour fad, and this was terrible, and so forth, and he became quite frothy about it. He tries to find things. Now, as far as Scientology developing here or there some ridges and some upsets and so forth, look at the planet it's being released into. You mean to say we're responsible for the conduct of the planet? Well, we're not yet entirely responsible, but we'll make it. You start releasing things to people and races and that sort of thing. Here and there, there's going to be a little switch around and an upset or something like that, but believe me, we have less of them than anybody else ever had. And we straighten them out. Eventually, we take care of these things. Well, that's quite remarkable. So there really isn't any real trouble for them to look at. To make a story out of this, you'd have to sock at each one of these points one way or the other, you see? And yet, because there is no story there, of course, they can't write the story because it doesn't fit into the modern press specifications. There must be disturbance, there must be upset, people must be worried, and people must have, by reason of this story, a more disturbed environment than they had before. Nevertheless, all things to the contrary. The true story of Scientology is simply Dr. Philosophy developed a philosophy. People found it interesting. People found it worked. People passed it along. Others, and it grew. Well, you could dream it up. You could even make a story out of it if it was a sane press. You could say, look, nobody ever found these answers before. There's never been one on this planet. You could say a lot of things of this particular character, all of them equally true and very startling and well worth announcement, but there's no conflict in it. So therefore, the story of Scientology goes true as an arrow, and nobody really can do very much about it, do very much to it, because they can't rough up its edges. If you ever want to be completely crashed, get in the road of truth.